Hello, Freedom Nation. It's Jeff here once again with another episode of the Freedom Nation podcast. On today's show, I've got David Morgan. David is a financial guy, similar to me. He actually has been in the newsletter business for quite a while. So we're going to talk a little bit about that because I know I've gotten people, you know, when we've had our online question and answer sessions, got a few people asking about doing newsletters. And so you're going to get to hear from somebody who was doing it kind of the old school way and now the new school way and learn a little bit about that. So stay tuned. We'll be right back on with you in just one second.
Welcome to the Freedom Nation podcast with Jeff Kickle. On this show, Jeff shares his expertise in financial and retirement planning from a different perspective. Planning for your Freedom Day, which is the first day that you wake up and have enough income or assets and do not have to go to work that day. Learn how to calculate what you need, how to generate income sources, and listen to interviews from others who've done it themselves. Get ready to experience your own Freedom Day.
Hey, everybody, welcome to the show. David, how are you, sir?
I'm doing well, Jeff. Thank you.
Thank you for being on. Look forward to our conversation today. Why don't we get started with your story? Tell us a little bit about how you got to where you're at today.
Okay, well, so I've always been interested in money from the time I was a kid, for whatever reason. It just fascinated me about, you know, what do these adults do? And you got to get money or earn it and get a job. And then when you get it, what do you do with it? You buy a house and you buy a car and you get groceries. But, you know, that's what my dad does. But, you know, how about these great big skyscrapers out here? How do you build the, you know, the San Diego Coliseum? How does that happen? And so I had all these ideas running around my head. And I was getting 25 cents a week allowance working, doing my chores. My family had a pretty modest house out in the country with 1 acre. One acre when you're, you know, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 seems like a lot of land.
It's like the biggest thing ever. Yeah.
And I watered the fruit trees and it took like an hour and a half. It's the most boring thing. And I got 25 cents a week. And out in the country wasn't much to spend it on. And one day I got a cupro nickel quarter rather than a silver quarter. Like, holy moly, what's this? I didn't actually ask my dad. I just looked at it and compared it to the stack I had. And went, this can't be the same value. I mean, this thing isn't silver. You know, what is it? And that just kind of maybe sparked something in my subconscious. I don't get too analytical, but, you know, I held on to that. Started studying money on my own and kind of learned a few things. And then came a day my dad asked me what I wanted to do. I said, I want to work in the financial industry. Kind of blew up and said, you're not going there. And so I started to look into other things and discovered, you know, flying. And I was old enough to learn to fly at 16. So I started flying when I was 16 years old. And then, of course, I kind of excelled in school. I was one of those kind of nerdy guys. So I'm off to engineering school, Cal Poly San Luis Obispo, for an aeronautical engineering degree. By the time I was 19, I had almost every rating you could get, including instructor's license. And so I taught the dean of architecture to fly, taught his wife to fly, taught a few cowboys to fly, and had a lot of fun, really, teaching flying at the same time I was working toward my degree. Got out of school, started an aircraft career. But in the background, I was always doing financial stuff. I was trading futures. I was investing in the stock market from an early age, reading financial literature left, right, subscribing to newsletters, going to investment conferences. And I moonlighted a little bit on the financial and the things, got an insurance license, a real estate license, worked for a certified financial planner, all that while I was still in the aircraft industry. I got laid off in the aircraft industry. Big story. I won't go into it, Jeff, but and I was on my own. And so I reconnected with the CFP, certified financial planner. Hung with him for a while, but I didn't like the way it was kind of set up. I just didn't feel it was as ethical as it could be, or in my case, should be. So I just started on my own, basically doing my passion, and it ended up kind of a serendipity in the newsletter business. And then I was at that transition, as you mentioned in the opening, where I was doing a hard copy mail out letter, which is quite difficult because to succeed in that business, you got to have something like 10,000 subscribers.
Yeah.
And get a mail house to do all the work for you. You just send them the copy and they print it up and stuff the envelopes for you. Well, I wasn't nearly at that level. So I did it by hand myself, and I ran the electronic letter, which went side by side. And after, I forget, Jeff, probably 3 years, four at the most, I just basically discontinued the hard copy. And what I did was I said, if you are a hard copy subscriber and you're willing to transition electronically, I will give you 6 months free. And it was amazing of how many of those people, I had like 120 hard copy, all of a sudden discovered they did have a computer. And they could get it by electronic form. So I dropped it like half immediately.
Yeah.
So, you know, that was a good deal for them. But it also saved me hours of time and printing and all the good ones. So like I went from 120 to 60, immediately slipped over. And at the very end, there were like five or six, you know, elderly guys and then one woman, and they loved me, but can you please do it? You know, and I said, really, I can't.
Yeah, I'm just not going to. I'm sorry.
Yeah, and it's been a bumpy ride at times, been very satisfying in a lot of ways. I love what I do. I'm still passionate about it and certainly always learning more, and just made some very good friendships, colleagues, peer group over the years, and going to be able to speak at investment conferences where you're fairly well known in a very small niche. The precious metals industry is not that big. And I do resources. I do all the resources, you know, lithium and, of course, rare earth elements and cobalt and copper and you name it. We've studied it, written about it, made recommendations on it. But the bread and butter is still the precious metals. That's kind of the top tier of not only the commodity sector, but of the resource sector as well.
Got it. So who's your typical, I mean, is it the individual investor? Or do you have institutional investors that follow you or?
Both. It's mostly retail. But the bread and butter is actually small business owners. Most of these people have built themselves up kind of like me from the ground up, maybe one or two, you know, a small percentage might have inherited a business from their family or something, but almost all of them. Of course, it's just pure retail.
Yep.
You know, someone that's an investor and they learn about, you know, precious metals and they decide they want to diversify and get into that part of it. And then institutional-wise, not as much as there was. When the bull market started in the year 2000 for gold, I went through the money manager circuit in Europe. So all through the United Kingdom, all through Switzerland, a little bit in France. Those are the three main ones, Singapore, but a lot of money managers that were heavily into the mining sector. And that was my, you know, my main focus. And so at that time, there were several that subscribed to my service because I had, you know, connections to a lot of startups and exploration companies and, you know, batting for the home run type of things, which is part of my work. I do it differently than almost everybody in my industry. I weight the portfolio. So we buy blue chips first, then we do top tier blue chips, then we move down a little bit to mid-tier producers, then we do junior producers, then we do rank speculations. Okay. Rank speculations are what I just described. And that is for people that want the risk, but I teach them, tell them, emphasize to them, money can afford to lose. If we got a winning horse, we can always bet more before the finish line, which is a pretty good analogy. It's the only industry I really know of where making the betting analogy, when you go to the track, you got to make your bet before the race starts and you get what you get. But in my field, you can watch the horses and see who's lagging and who's leading. And then you can put more money on the leaders because you got a greater percentage. And that comes out with drill results, material changes of the company. So sometimes you buy a stock for 12 cents and it gets to $1.20, you got a 10 bagger. It's actually a safer and better buy at 120 than it was at 12 cents, believe it or not. It doesn't happen often, but it does happen. If you have someone like me to watch it for you, then you can buy, you know, you don't want to bet the farm, but you can put in substantive amount and watch it go from 120 to 12, as an example. That kind of move doesn't happen very often. But the point being is that you really don't want to bet anything but a place bet until there is a substantive change. And once there is, depending on the jump in the price, it still could be, it could be overvalued, it could be fair valued, it could be undervalued. A lot of times, especially because it's mostly unsophisticated people that buy these type of stocks, they don't know. But that again is my job, and I go,
they're buying them cheap because, oh, if it does turn into that, well, it might.
I think it's an ego thing too, and this is my perception, but I've been in the business, like, you know, officially 25 years, and, you know, individually a lot longer than that. And I think it's a bit of an ego thing for some people. It's like, well, I've got IBM. Yeah, well, I've got 150,000 shares of XYZ mining. Like, you know, it's worth $20 million and it's really only 500 bucks.
Yes, exactly. That's hilarious. What's what is your take on the metals market? I mean, you know, gold has just gone through the roof. It's pulling back a little bit right now, but I mean, it's had one hell of a run this year. What do you see that's driving that?
Well, it's three words. I say it almost every interview for a new interview. It's absolutely imperative that people understand this. And that is, all fiat fails.
Yeah.
Every time that the system at large has been, be it the Roman Empire or any empire, any nation state that's gone on a unbacked fiat money system has failed. There's a 100% track record. So we're in a position now, it's never happened to a recorded history, where the world is on the reserve currency of the US dollar. So if the dollar fails, the system fails. Now, I do not expect it to fail completely. Yeah. Dollar's worth nothing. Zimbabwe, Argentina, the Weimar Republic, that will not happen with the US dollar. But what is happening is that dollar from 1913 of 100 pennies is now worth 1.5 pennies.
Yeah.
So we have had basically a hyperinflation, but it's taken 115 years, 13 years to get to the point we are now. So if I woke up my grandfather and said a house costs 400,000, he'd say, well, that's hyperinflation. Yeah. But again, it's taken enough time where most people kind of like just, you know, kind of get along with it. And, oh, that's normal. It's not normal, but it's normal enough to adjust to it. Once it accelerates at the final phases, which we've just entered, then the failure rate starts to accelerate and people can't pay their grocery bills, or their rent's increased by 20% in a year, or their insurance premiums gone up.
I was going to say their healthcare costs go up 15% a year.
So that's when you start to get to the end. So as a hedge, the banks are the smart money. The banks have been buying gold hand over fist for the last couple of years. I noted at least 2 years ago that the run to gold had begun. And then the interviewer would say, what do you mean? I say, well, a good analogy for the run to gold is you start off with a light walk, and you're just kind of dragging your feet walking. Then you go to a full walk. Then you go to a brisk walk. And then you go to a light jog, a full jog, fast jog, a light run, a run, and an all-out sprint. And that's how it works in the gold market. There's going to be, so the walk, the calm walk, or maybe brisk walk is where we are right now. The banks have loaded up on gold. It is the money of last resort. It's probably going to be connected to the new monetary system. And they're in the know that this fiat system, although it's not going to fail completely, is going to be adjusted probably with some type of central bank digital currency, or a private-public partnership like a J.P. Morgan coin or Amazon coin. There could be several. It still would work. The crypto sphere is expanding every day. More people are adopting to it. And it's pretty obvious from the financial powers that be, the money masters, as I call them, want to push the system into this digital realm via the Genius Act and stable coins to keep the U.S. dollar continuing on its quest to nowheresville.
What's your take on crypto and I mean, I can see it. My personal take is I can see it from the standpoint of making the financial system more efficient, because it's insanely inefficient as it is today. What's your take on it? I mean, is that going to be what we pay for things in, or do you think we're still going to be on the Fiat forever?
Well, I don't think we'll be on the Fiat forever. I think there will be a transition, as I said. I'm not that favorable to most of them. Okay. If you go to my website, themorningreport.com, and get on the blog, I've done, I don't know what it is, 1,700 interviews or something like that, and a lot of writing for free for the public for education.
Sure.
But on there, if you type into the search engine, Crypto Conspiracy, I did 30 podcasts dealing with primarily Bitcoin. Okay. And Bitcoin is something that most people don't understand. And of course, the Bitcoin maxis say, well, you don't understand it, David. Well, I am a degreed engineer and I got a pretty good math.
I think I can figure this out.
And I got it figured out better than most of them. And the problem is that the miners lose money. So doing the gold mining, which I know a great deal about, as an analogy, there would be no gold miner in the world that's mining gold that costs them $10,000 the ounce and it only sells for $4,000 an ounce. Bitcoin's mining basically at the cost around $100,000, although their accounting trickery, which is legal, doesn't show that exact number. The truth is it is that number. So they're really not making any money. So they're diluting the heck out of their shareholders. The price of those companies keeps going down, down, down into the burning ring of fire. And yet Bitcoin's price keeps going up, up, up. There's a huge disconnect. And really some of the smartest guys I know in my field are really promoting Bitcoin, and I cannot figure out why. It's come on, guys. Most of them have finance degrees. Not that you need a finance degree to do what I'm doing. Common sense will show you. I mean, you can get a financial statement and get on the internet and learn how to do it over a weekend. It's not that difficult. Far less difficult than Laplace transform. Sorry, I had to throw out an inside joke to the engineers out there. But anyway, I'm not favorable to that one, but I agree it's much more efficient and it's a truth meter. Every action is immutable. So you can see on the ledger who's done what to whom and what the cost was, et cetera. So I think there is a place for it, but I think it needs to be backed by something. Again, to go to a fiat system we're on now, which has always failed, to an electronic fiat system, what have we gained?
Yeah.
Not very much. So if we have a system that's regulated, and I'm for free markets, it wouldn't have to be regulated, but if we have a system that is trusted and has backing by, it could be cobalt, it could be oil, it could be real estate, it could be almost anything, but it has true intrinsic value. I see that will take place, or I think it will take place. And it'll probably go side by side. You probably have unbacked government mandated script in electronic form, and maybe an Amazon will say, okay, you get tied into the profits of Amazon. I don't know.
Yeah, that's cool. I haven't heard that take on it before. So that's intriguing to me that, you know, we're always looking for that next thing and what's the future going to be. And so many people look at, you know, you've heard the gold people for years say that inflation's happening, and you look at it and you're like, okay, I don't necessarily see it, but you're right. I mean, you know, 50 years, 60, 70 years ago, a house was 20 grand and now it's 500, 600, 700 grand. You know, that's inflation of real asset on top of it. And it didn't help much by, you know, the Federal Reserve keeping interest rates at basically zero rates for 20 years and wonder why things haven't, or why things have inflated beyond belief.
Correct.
So cool. Well, what, you know, if somebody is out there, you know, and you're an expert in the newsletter business, if you were starting today and you knew now what you knew, or you know what you knew then and you know what you know now, what would your suggestion be for somebody that wanted to start out?
Well, one, I think any endeavor, newsletter writer, editor included, it's to find your passion. I mean, if you really like what you're doing, you don't, I would say, ever feel like you're working, but seldom. I mean, there's, you know, I do some work on a Saturday morning and then I'm free the rest of the weekend, but I never consider it to be work. It's not like I have to do it. It's like I get to.
Yeah.
You know, I get to review the financial
market. It would be stuff that you were doing anyhow half the time. So.
Right. I just put a camera on it, basically. Yeah. So, but I would say anyone that really wants to, if they're motivated by money or they're motivated by a quick start in profitability, I would write in the health field. I would not write.
Okay.
I have a friend now deceased, but he did two. He did a financial letter, which is one of the better ones, actually. Mm-hmm. But he also did kind of a sidekick health letter, which I never really paid that much attention to. And his subscriber base on the health side was like 10 times greater than on the financial side, especially That's now with the boomers, which I'm one, are looking for, you know, quality of life going toward the end and, you know, what supplement, what diet, what, you know, so I would definitely just do that as a general thing. I mean, you know, you ask the question, give me a very good answer. If you want to start, start. And if you want to do a financial newsletter, give a free health note on the side, because and I'm not that motivated by money. It sounds like I am. And at one time I definitely was, but I've grown and adapted and kind of changed my view on, you know, what's it all about as I've matured, but it's still important, but it doesn't, it's not that driver like it once was. And on that basis, I'm very happy doing what I'm doing, but yeah, for pure ease and whatever, of course, there's more competition in the health field too, but there's a lot of competition in the financial end as well. Yeah. That would be my, and don't pretend, you know, do not be, oh, I'm an expert in the silver market if you're not, you know?
Yeah.
People could see that pretty easily. And I just made a joke of the silver guru because when I started, I didn't have a website. I just had an email address and I picked silver guru at Hotmail, silverguru22 at hotmail.com to get, you know, correspondence going.
Just something.
In my work. And I got the URL pretty quickly thereafter, but
sure.
We'll go, how'd you get Silver Guru 22? Well, believe it or not, I went to Hotmail and I typed in, what do you want for an email address? Put in Silver Guru and it said taken. Well, that'll be interesting. All right.
Dang it.
Silver Guru 1. Taken.
Nope.
I go, what? That's nuts. No one talks about silver on the web, and no one was in those days. It was two guys, myself and Ted Butler. But anyway, so I said, oh, the heck with it. Silver Guru 22. Yep, you can have that one. Okay, there we go. So I never took the Silver Guru seriously, really. Just kind of
It was just something to start with. Yeah.
Something to start with. And, you know, every now and then I'll be in a lecture. I was in one, wealth protection. One of the first lectures I did is probably the third or fourth time I've been on stage. And the promoter was like my lecture, but he was, you know, these people pay him to attend these things. And he goes, you know what? We've heard that before, and, you know, no one's ever explained to me why this, you know, why this happened. And, you know, this just sounds like the same old story. So I went and I told him exactly what had taken place and where my main predecessor had made a grave mistake in calculations and why it took place, and it blew the guy away. He goes, I have had so many I've asked that question to, and they just shrug their shoulders and say they don't know. You are the first one that's ever told us how the heck that happened. Yeah. I guess you are the silver guru. So,
well, good thing I got that one. Yeah.
Yeah, it felt good, especially because I was, you know, still pretty nervous in the early days. Not that I don't get a little butterflies getting on stage even to this day, but it made me feel good. And it was, again, you know, it was my expertise. I do not have all the answers. I do not know it all. I am a learn it all, not a know it all. No one can learn it at all, even in a very specific field like I'm in. But nonetheless, I still have fun.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, anything new in your world that you want to share with the audience?
I do. I've been asked, I've written three books with others. I wrote one by myself, Silver Manifesto, which is kind of Bible on silver and mining and money. It's out there on Amazon. It's sold out. I didn't run that many copies. You get it used. And then I did another one with more about investing and how to prevent losses. And so I was asked if I was ready to write another book by my business coach. And I said, not really. So I ended up doing a documentary and it just came out. So I'd like to promote that with you, Jeff. It's called Silver Sunrise. And it's at the URL, silversunrise.tv. It is for free. It's an educational piece, similar to the Four Horsemen film that I was in, like, whatever it was, 12 years ago or whatever. And it's a piece on basically the dysfunctioning that the money powers have over the population. The subtitle is Overcoming the Fear, Stress, and Control That Money Has in Our Lives. Mm-hmm. And I look at it from a more or less spiritual aspect more than you would in a normal financial film. It does go through most of the financial stuff as a background, a foundation, a basis, but also moves into kind of a higher realm of how much it can affect us as far as our well-being or our mental state, and how to kind of look at it from a more objective perspective, and the fact that your self-responsibility has a lot to do with how you feel about money and how you work.
Okay. Great. So it's not, it's about silver, or is it about the silver generation?
It's not really that much about silver.
Okay.
It's really about the money powers, and how it controls the Got population, and what we need to be as what's more valuable, the human experience or the amount of money you can get outside of yourself. Kind of asks a spiritual question of where does happiness really lie? Does it lie from all these things I can get outside of myself, the new car, the new house, the new boat, the new job, the new degree, or is it more of an internal situation where I'm actually satisfied because I contributed this to the world? I helped, at the food bank. I volunteered time to people that need, special care, or other things. Like I wrote a book that I broke even on, but it had a profound impact on people's thinking from that day forward. Or I brought music to the world that had never been heard before that's bringing joy to others. Or I helped start a foundation in Africa to get them electricity they never had. So there's a lot of things. So it's sort of that, as purportedly Einstein said, he dreaded the day where technology came in a greater abundance than our humanity. In other words, where our technology exceeded our humanity, because kind of gone this AI world where we're looking at these black screens all day and we've lost to really connect with each other. So it goes into that more than like silver. Okay. The reason the title was chosen is because I'm known to be one of the more educated people on the silver market. I've been in it for so many years.
Sure.
That it resonated with my audience, but it's more of a metaphor of the silver sunrise rather than, than any other title. And I just never change the title. I like the title, but it may be misleading what you pointed out.
I wanted to make sure I understood where you're coming from with it. I couldn't read the website fast enough. So, fantastic. Well, we'll make sure we put that in the show notes so the people can go to it, and it's free. So definitely take advantage of it. All right, David, let's transition to the fast five questions now.
All right.
First question, you wake up in the morning, business is gone. You have $500, a laptop computer, place to live, food and clothing. What do you do first?
So I've got nothing but that $500. And so give me the qualifiers. Do I have to start making a living or not?
Well, you'll eventually have to start making a living, but you got a place to stay and you don't really have any costs beyond anything else that you want over and above.
Well, I would parcel it out. I probably wouldn't, take the whole 500 and do something. So I'd probably drop it into five categories and see what I have to have for next month. 500 probably wouldn't cover my expenses. So I'd probably go into the markets I know best, probably the precious metals. I might look for an option trade that looked pretty viable. So I might bet $100 on an option. The rest I'd probably use for transportation and probably old school hard copy paper and ink to put out a resume saying, hey, here's my skill set. I'm looking for a job or I want to consult. Probably would move into consulting. With the laptop, I'd have the ability to make all the contacts I've already had and say, look, I've hit a bit of hard luck. I was bet the wrong side of the futures market and I'm broke. But whatever. So I think I'd use the internet to my advantage and my database and probably come out after 1 month fairly secure and moving forward from there.
Nice. What's the biggest business mistake you've ever made?
Trusting the wrong people. Really, it is. And I don't like to blame others. I'm not that type of person. But especially on a startup, you don't know. And most people don't know, like 99% of startups fail. They don't know it's that risky.
Yeah.
And then giving them time, energy, and money and turning out to find out later that it was basically a scam. That's happened a couple times. But, you know, you survive, you go on, you learn from it. But it's a bitter, bitter lesson most of the time.
Yeah, absolutely. What's a good book that you'd recommend for our audience?
What Has the Government Done to Our Money by Marie Rothbard.
Okay. What's the premise of the book?
Well, this is what we discussed, fails, why we should have integrity throughout the system, why money transcends everything that transcends, you know, national origin, religious beliefs, what you do for a living, sexual orientation. I mean, it transcends everything. We all have to have it to live. And because it touches all of us, that means that someone that can make a change in the money system for the betterment of humanity has really touched almost everyone.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. What's a tool that you use in your business every day that you might recommend?
Oh, that's a good one. Obviously, a computer, but that's trite. I would say programming. I would say Camtasia. Don't use it every day, but I use it for my private work, the paid subscribers, because I have a free letter and a paid letter. Hmm. And I use it for both. And it really is just a very good way for someone old school that doesn't want to learn a lot of tech to just, you know, put up what I want. You can have my handsome face or not. Most of them I do without the camera because they know what I look like. But to be able to make a very complicated idea more clear, because the old adage of picture's worth 1,000 words really does hold merit for me. And if I can show you a picture and then explain it and send it out. So I'd say that's one of the more useful tools I use now 3 or 4 times a week.
Nice. Last question. What is your definition of freedom?
Wow, that's a great question. Basically, to be in a voluntary system on all aspects of our lives. In other words, to have the ability for, you know, the founding fathers' ideas of, you know, free speech, the monetary freedom. I mean, the old idea of financial freedom used to be that if you had X amount, you were financially free. You didn't have to work. You wake up one morning and you're free. Yeah. That no longer holds, especially in China, where there's a social credit score that goes along with it. So you'd be a billionaire in China and be quote unquote anti-government, not be able to buy a plane ticket because you're not politically correct. And believe it or not, that kind of structure is coming to the United States. In fact, in some places, it's already been implemented. And I think most of your viewers and listeners know that it took place in Canada during the illness with the trucker strike. Everybody that had a phone was tracked, and even their crypto was cut off. Mm-hmm. So freedom to me means, you know, I forget the name of it. You may know, you're probably not old enough, but it was about the lions in the savannah, and was let them be free or something about free, but it's to be basically free in all aspects of your lives. And really, you only have to adhere to a couple laws. You know, basically, you won't want to do anything that's going to harm anyone else. You know, live by anything that you say, you follow through with. So you live your word. So that's the basics of all contract law. Yeah. So your word is your bond, and it's valid at all times. If not, you've broken a contract, and there's a penalty to pay. Mm-hmm. That's where the civil and criminal cases come.
Yeah.
And secondly, don't do harm anyone else. So everyone gets to make actions. There's a friend of mine, I'll cite him because we're friends, and he's the one that came up with the two laws. His name is Richard Mayberry. He writes a newsletter as well, and he writes about the two laws. You can look it up. I didn't quote him exactly, but I gave you the general idea. And really, it could be that simple. I mean, we do not need a tax code that's bigger than my library back here. Because they don't know what's in it. You don't know what's in it. No one knows what's in it. And we want to keep things elegant. Elegant is usually a good idea that's very easily explained and simplifies things. Mm-hmm. Makes our lives easier, not more complex.
Excellent. Great answer. I love that one. I hate the answer of, well, I want to do what I want, when I want, with who do I want. Okay, that's fine. Whatever. But Yeah, wonderful answer. So thank you on that. Once again, remind us, what's the best place to get in contact with you if somebody is interested in learning more?
Yeah, the best is to go to the website, themorganreport.com. And if you forget that, my name's a pretty common name, David Morgan. If you type David Morgan Silver into any search engine,
it'll come
usually populate after the paid ads.
Yeah,
you'll find a lot of information of the work I've done the last 25 years.
Yeah, and you said on the Morgan Report, there's a free version, and there's
there's a sign up for the free report or a free letter, and then there's a paid version for serious investors that want to make moves into the resource sector. It's not just silver and gold, although that's our main focus, but we did. Five baggers on some uranium companies. We've done rare earth elements. We've got a copper company, lithium company. I might have said that. So there's we do the spectrum, but we try to find, as I said, weighted blue chips. If I might just add, there's kind of a pushback from the bullion coy dealers, and many of them I know personally, and they're friends of mine. And many of them will tell you, well, don't ever buy a gold stock, just buy gold, because gold does better than a gold stock. On aggregate, on average, that's usually true. But if you're a stock picker that knows what they're doing, if you took my favorite silver stock, which is a blue chip, so you could put in 10,000, 100,000, a million, 2 million, 10 million. I mean, you could have put that kind of money in this company. It's that big. For silver to equal what that stock has done, silver would have to be $125 right now.
Yeah.
So that stock beat the holy living, out of silver itself. So if you pick the right stocks, you certainly can exceed the gains made in the metal itself. I've always advocated having the real metal first, but after that's accomplished and you have kind of that core position of the world falls apart, you've still got some real money to spend, then you're going to go into the resource sector and be careful. But if you buy correctly, you can do quite well.
Awesome. Well, wonderful advice, and look forward to, I pulled up your website, so I would look forward to jumping through there a little bit. It's always been an interest of mine. So thank you for being on the show today. Appreciate your time and your advice, and look forward to staying in contact with you.
Well, Jeff, it's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks, David. Folks, as always, make sure that you subscribe to the channel. Make sure that you hit that little up vote button or hit the 5-star rating, and help us to get more of these shows in front of other people and get people like David in front of other people. So thanks a lot, and we will see you guys back here the very next time.
Thank you for listening to the Freedom Nation Podcast. You can find us on Apple Podcasts and all the major channels. Wherever you're listening, please subscribe to the channel and leave a rating and review. If you have friends and family that could benefit from their own Freedom Day, please share with them. Finally, join Freedom Nation by following us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter.